Copeland versus Macon County, Mr. Unrath.
Good morning, my name is Craig Unrath. I represent Macon County, the defendant in this case. On the evening of September 21st, 2000, the plaintiff, Mr. Copeland, was admitted as a pretrial detainee to the Macon County Jail. He was charged with attempted murder and aggravated battery of a child. Prison guard Darren Gregory conspired with inmates in the jail to have him severely beaten. He was subsequently convicted of his criminal conduct. A suit was brought to civil court. And we now face a situation where a plaintiff is seeking indemnity from the County of Macon. The issue in this court is whether the correctional officers who conspired to have Mr. Copeland severely beaten by his fellow inmates was acting within the scope of his employment. This issue is controlled by Illinois law, which provides that plaintiff has the burden of establishing a contemporaneous relationship between the jail guard's conduct and the scope of his employment. Now, he relies on two pieces of evidence to establish this link. One was when the guard was speaking to an inmate, he said he described Mr. Copeland as a real winner. And in the second statement, he said, "Can you believe that somebody would do that? How could somebody do that to a baby?" That's it. That's the evidence we have to establish this link between his conduct and the scope of his employment. Now, the Illinois Supreme Court has acknowledged that under certain circumstances, criminal conduct can be fall within the scope of employment, but where the acts are different in from the type of acts he is authorized to perform, or where they're performed solely for his own self-interest, at that point he has departed from the scope of employment, and Macon County would not be charged with indemnifying that conduct. Now, the Illinois Supreme Court made one point here. They said, moreover, an employer is not responsible for acts which are clearly inappropriate to or unforeseeable in the accomplishment of an authorized act. I think this is a key phrase here, and I think it's an important rule of law. Clearly inappropriate in the accomplishment of an authorized act. Now, we have no doubt that his conduct was clearly inappropriate. It was more than that. It was criminal. What was the authorized result that he was trying to accomplish? What is the connection between his conduct and the job he was hired to perform?
Has he been prosecuted?
Pardon me?
Has he been prosecuted?
Yes, he has. And as I understand it, he pled guilty to a reduced charge. The interest in the issue in this case is what interest of his employer, what authorized result could he possibly hope to satisfy by having this inmate, this pretrial detainee, severely beaten, pardon me, by fellow inmates. Now, plaintiff would have you believe, and the district court agreed, that he was motivated by a desire to prevent and punish child abuse. Now, this argument suffers from a number of flaws, first of which, prisons, and particular prison guards, are not authorized to punish people for their crimes. They're there to maintain order in the jail. They don't issue these people cats of nine tails. They're not out there.
I think that's perfectly good. But as far as his motive is concerned, don't you think it's probably a reasonable description of his motive to punish and deter child abuse?
I see his motive, based on the statements he made, as being nothing more than a sadistic self-interest in seeing a guy getting beaten up. That's all I see there, Your Honor. I don't see how anyone could rationally think or believe that by having this man beaten to a pulp, he is somehow making society a better place.
Well, he is adding to the deterrent. if you commit child abuse, and this is what you have to foresee when you're put in jail before you're even tried and convicted, well, that certainly increases the expected punishment for this.
And I think there's the rub, Your Honor. at least
I understand it's not his business. That's your argument. He's not authorized to inflict punishment, and he doesn't even work for the prosecutor or the police.
And we don't even know whether
he is. But there is a sense in which what he wants to do is to punish child molesters.
But we have.
It's not that he has a personal dislike of. Presumably, any child molester, he would want to be treated in the same way. Not anything personal to the plaintiff.
You mentioned that a person who had committed child abuse when this
accused. Yeah.
He was accused. Mm-hmm. We don't know whether he did it or not. He may very well not have.
Well, and no, you said he was convicted later.
No, I meant the prison guard was convicted.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, so the record is unclear.
We don't know what happened to...
have no idea whether or not Mr. Copeland was ever convicted or perhaps exonerated. If he knew what he was charged with, he must also have known that he had not been convicted. This material would have been available to any jail guard.
Well, as Judge Posner has indicated, I don't think there's any... It seems to me that there's no question that he was wanting to inflict punishment, right?
That's correct.
But that's... So where does that put us?
It's not what he's hired to do. It's not his job to... His job is to maintain order and discipline. Indeed, his job is to protect that inmate, particularly a pretrial detainee. But their job, the job he was hired to do, was to keep these inmates from hurting other inmates, to keep the jail secure. He has no interest in punishing people other than for their conduct actually that takes place in the prison. He certainly has no authorized position to somehow prevent child abuse. And this really comes down to the crux of the matter. This is Section 228 of the Restatement Second of Agency, which states lays out a number of criteria. Is it the kind of activity he was required to perform? It is not. He was hired to maintain order and discipline in the jail, not create disorder. It had absolutely no benefit to his employer. His employer hired him to prevent violence, not create it. I see I'm encroaching on my rebuttal time here, Your Honor. I would just like to close by saying that the scope of employment is not determined by reference to interests of general public policy. The scope of his employment is determined by the manifestations of the master, that's the jail. They are the ones that determine what he is authorized to do and what he is not. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Unrath. Mr. Wilson?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Brad Wilson, and I represent the plaintiff, Jason Copeland. In response to one of the questions posed to counsel, I would inform the court that Mr. Copeland was, in fact, found innocent of the charges of first-degree murder and aggravated battery to a child. He was, and in fact, at his trial, he did indicate to the court and suggested that he was guilty of negligence and was convicted of a negligent count for which he was sentenced to time already served. I would like to address the scope of employment issue first. In Payne versus Whitmer, the Illinois Supreme Court did set out a four-part test, and that test said the conduct of a servant is within the scope of employment if but only if it is of the kind he is employed to perform, it occurs within authorized time and space.
The restatement test.
Yes.
Right. And so can you give us any case that says that Gregory was granted authority as a correctional officer to plan and execute an assault on a pretrial detainee or where the assault on a pretrial detainee accomplishes an authorized goal? I mean, your situation is very sympathetic in that Copeland is in the situation he's in. He's got a judgment against Gregory. Gregory has no money, and, you know, the county does have money. But is there any case that you can point us to support?
Yes, Your Honor. I would note that one case that we cited in our brief was the case of Bryant versus Lavini. And in that case, there was a store manager. Contrary to his store policies, His employer's policy is he showed up at his workplace intoxicated. When he showed up at the store, he saw a 10-year-old boy urinating on the side of a wall, Your Honor. He then became enraged. He started shouting racially derogatory names.
Sure, but that's the example. That's the standard example of an employee who goes too far, but who is mistaken fashion, obviously, in that case, is doing what he takes to be advancing his employer's goals.
Yes, and I would believe
that the kid was, you know, defacing the store, drive away customers, and so on, so the employee overreacted, but he was doing, you know, what he was supposed to do. Similarly, you know, if a jail guard shot someone trying to escape and wasn't authorized to do that, nevertheless, you could see how it would be, he would be misguidedly serving what he conceived to be his employer's goals. It's quite hard to see that here.
With all due respect, Your Honor, again, and Bryant and Lavini, the individual, the store manager, went on to attack a different 4-year-old, a different child. The child who's urinating in the wall was a 10-year-old child. The child who ultimately was injured was a 4-year-old child. I don't know that you can say that he was attempting to protect store property by attacking a completely different child. Someone, the ages of 10 and 4 would obviously make it apparent that there was a difference. I think the important part about that case is it says that if an employee goes beyond the strict line of duty, and I think that's what the defendants are trying to suggest, that it has to be a strict line of duty. Here, Gregory was a correctional guard. Yes, he is charged with maintaining discipline, but he does have some part in the judicial system. He is there to supervise convicted inmates, not just pretrial detainees, but his role is somewhat that of a punisher. Granted, the court...
Yeah, but there was no discipline infraction by Copeland. It wasn't like there was something Copeland was doing and then he, you know, something, some rule or something he was violating and then he just decided he was going to ask other inmates to help him out. That's not the situation.
No, Your Honor. The evidence shows that Jason Copeland was singled out because
right.
he was suspected of child abuse.
Right.
And
but I'm talking about something in the jail. Usually the sheriffs and those in the jail have to do with keeping discipline in the jail because there's been some infraction in the jail. That's not the situation we have here. This is just a broader charge. And this theory that the court had that, you know, this is that he's fulfilling the policy of the taxpayers of Macon County who have an interest in dealing with people who have these kinds of charges, that's not grounded in any law either.
As pointed in our brief and to the district court, Jaron Gregory is employed, the sheriff's department is master, that is part of Macon County. We've argued that those entities have a duty to prevent...
I know, but you can't go that far. I mean, suppose someone who's employed, well, suppose one of our law clerks killed someone he thought was committing a federal crime. You wouldn't argue that because he's an employee of the United States and the FBI agents are employees of the United States, it's part of his duty to prevent crime, right?
No, Your Honor. But
so you have a county that has multiple functions.
But again, a prison guard, I'm sorry I cut you off.
No.
A prison guard, part of his responsibility is seeing that people who are guilty of crimes carry out the sentences imposed by the court.
Yes, well, that's...
I don't see
that... That would be the escape case, right? If someone's trying to escape, that person is trying to thwart his punishment. But Copeland wasn't trying to do that. He wasn't trying to get out of punishment. He hadn't been sentenced yet.
He hadn't done anything, but he was suspected of child abuse. And that...
I know, if he were abusing children in a jail or something, sure, but there wasn't anything in his jail conduct which could have, which Gregory could have thought required him to beat him up.
Well, Gregory is a law enforcement officer. Gregory, under the Illinois statute, as a sworn officer under the Sheriff's Department, is obligated to report and prevent has a reporting function.
And there's nothing, no reporting or preventing function remotely related to anything that Copeland was doing.
He went beyond the strict line of duty, Your Honor?
I don't think it was the strict line of duty. It's not that he crossed a little ways, was overzealous. He went into a completely different area.
See, the problem is there was no line of duty. No line of duty in what he did. I mean, there is nothing you can point to that shows that was within the scope of his employment to mete out his own form of justice, because that's what we're talking about here.
Again,
it's his own form of justice. He despises, as we all do, child abuse. Here's a guy, pretrial detainee. He wants to give him a little lesson that he won't forget, to perhaps hope that he won't commit it again. That's not in any book, statute, reg, procedure of the institution.
But again, if you look at some of the other cases that we've cited, for example, Wilson versus City of Chicago, a police officer beats an innocent man, beats somebody to pull a confession out of a suspect. That officer is essentially pretty much doing the same thing. He's forcing a person to admit to a crime he didn't do, so that he may impose his own form of justice. He's doing it early in the process.
Police officers are charged with investigating.
Right.
That could be a long extension of investigating, but this is just meeting out punishment.
Well, again, I believe that the jail guards do have some obligation. Part of the duties entail supervising individuals who have been punished by the courts. It's not simply...
No, but he hasn't been punished by the courts. Rick Copeland has not been punished.
He overstepped. He based upon the facts showing...
But even if he had
Gregory
been punished, that would still be overstepping, mm-hmm. right? Even if Copeland had been sentenced.
Gregory thought that this individual had... I mean, I fail to see the distinction between a police officer...
So your position is that the jail guard can... can make a determination of guilt and impose a sentence without any court process, and that's part of his responsibility.
No, Your Honor, I respectfully suggest you're overstretching my argument. I'm saying that he is not lawfully entitled to do that, but if he goes beyond his authority and does that, he still, under the cases that we cited, will be found to be acting within the scope of his employment.
But if you look at the restatement test, it's a matter of degree, you know. Conduct of a servant not within the scope of employment, different in kind from what's far beyond the authorized time or space limits, are too little actuated by a purpose to serve the master, right?
I believe that we've shown that he has an intent to serve the master, and also that he was well within his time and space limits, Your Honor. I believe that he was acting within the scope of his employment. I see my time is up, but I would ask you that you affirm the decision of the trial court. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Wilson. Mr. Unrath, how much time did you have? 2 minutes?
Just briefly, Your Honor. The essential aspect of this case is that his conduct was a complete departure from the conduct that he was authorized to perform. It goes even further than that. You can't find a single rational link to establish the contemporaneous relationship between his conduct and his scope of employment. The Illinois Supreme Court has held that serious crimes are generally unforeseeable and found to be outside the scope of employment as a matter of law, and that is precisely the situation we have right here. Now, counsel mentioned Wilson v. City of Chicago. They tortured a suspect in order to get a confession. They thought they were doing the right thing. It did a rational link did exist between their misconduct and their acts authorized by their employer. I made the example in my brief of a prisoner who had repeatedly attempted to escape and a jail guard who broke his legs. That, again, would have the necessary rational link between the conduct and an authorized act. In this case, we simply do not have that rational link. I would close by saying that to rule otherwise is to punish taxpayers for the unlawful acts of public officials. The law in Illinois has been settled on this respect for quite some time. To change it now on the basis of this case would affect a tremendous a reversal of a long line of established case law. We ask that this case be reversed. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Wilson. Now, last case for argument is United States versus Dow, and is Mr. Gavras ready on the speakerphone? Okay.